Hello and welcome to this week's instalment of Nucleus Investment Insights. This week we step back from the markets to take a look at how to achieve and maintain financial good health. We'll look at when you might need to seek financial advice, the different avenues you have for getting it, and things it's important to know when doing so. Think of it as a 101 or a health check for your finances. For those of you already seasoned in this, I hope we'll give you a quick review and prompt you regarding any areas you might need to review in your financial situation, or prompt you to share it with someone you know might need it. And for those less seasoned, I hope it will make you more confident seeking the advice you need. Joining me today to guide you through this topic are Nucleus Wealth's very own Tim Fuller and Christopher Whaler. Tim Fuller is Nucleus Wealth's head of advice. He started his career as an engineer working in the West Australian mines, before pivoting to financial advice and working for the likes of AMP Mercer and a boutique Melbourne investment house. Tim saw the writing on the wall for the delivery of advice through technology and then teamed up with Damien Klassen to bring us Nucleus Wealth. Welcome, Tim. How does it feel to be on the other side of the microphone today?
Hi, Shelley. Yes, no, very good. It's a very comfortable chair and I can see why Damien likes sitting in it. So I'm really looking forward to today's show.
Excellent. Me too. And introducing for the first time to the show, Christopher Whaler. He's Nucleus Wealth's Associate Financial Advisor. Chris has spent his career in wealth management and investment banking, working for the likes of Deutsche Bank, UBS and Goldman Sachs across the world. Christopher got into financial advice after seeing the standards in advice increase over the last few years, most especially in reaction to the Banking Royal Commission. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. And everyone, a quick reminder before we get started, if you haven't already, subscribe and click the notification bell to be notified when we go live or have a new webinar to watch on YouTube, or follow us on your preferred platform. We also ask if you could take a moment to click like on the video now to help our show grow. And of course, for those listening in live, please feel free to drop in your questions in the YouTube live stream chat along the way and we'll get them answered for you. Rightio, so moving on to the agenda today, I think I've touched on this briefly already, but we're going to be looking at when will you need advice, what you can get out of advice, what the process is for getting that advice, why you might want to use advice on an ongoing basis, and then we're also going to look at, I guess, some of the hybrid options and the newer digital options that are available in advice and what they look like at the moment. So, Tim, I might kick it off to you. Can you tell us when might someone need to access financial advice?
Really good question, Shelley. So, and a terrific intro there. Look, the interesting part with financial advice is it's often, I guess, recognised much later in life. So, you know, typically most people think, well, I'm too young for an advisor, or I haven't got enough money for an advisor, or, you know, the things that are important to me may not be important enough to warrant purchasing financial advice. And it's actually probably the other way around. You know, the bulk is this, we've got this little graphic up at the moment, that the bulk of the main sort of trigger points for financial advice actually happen quite early in the, you know, in, yep. In the first sort of 20s, 30s and 40s. And that's often where the financial advice can make a huge impact. It can make a huge impact both for the positive, but also helping you to avoid big negatives that will have you know, significant impacts along the way. If you sort of have a quick look at that, and this is a chart by Michael Kitsis, who's a US advisor who puts out some terrific documentation and things for advisors. You know, moving into your first home, of course, getting married, first child, changing careers, divorce, whether or not that's on everybody's timeline, hopefully not, but it is, you know, obviously certainly something there, starting a business, and then, of course, you know, buying subsequent properties perhaps and you know, mm-hmm. and starting to prepare for retirement. But, you know, huge number of touch points where big decisions are made. And so, you know, often you'll make them as a part, you know, in a partnership if you yeah. know, all by yourself perhaps as well. And so seeking, I guess, independent and external viewpoints from somebody who knows about finances, particularly when these milestones in life involve finances, which, you know, more often than not they do, can be incredibly helpful and formative into, you know, making sure you're heading down the right path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess the segue from that then is, so obviously we've got a bit of an idea around the milestones of a person's life. It's then saying, okay, well then what do advisors do? And maybe this is the bit where it's unclear. So what I've done here is I've just popped down, eight odd broad areas, which typically an advisor can give you some help with. It doesn't have to be all of them, of course, and we'll chat around that in a couple of moments. But the big part there is just sort of getting a bit of an idea around, you know, what's available. Obviously, investments, financial things, taxation, mortgage and debt management, insurance needs, which is something we can talk about in, you know, from the early days, in the earlier part of your life. And then goals-based financial planning is another crucial part, because a number of those milestones may not actually happen in your life mm-hmm. if you don't plan for them. A huge one at the moment, obviously, is people buying their own home, or, you know, saving up to purchase their own home. Terrific goal, obviously, you know, a huge step and a big milestone in a person's life, but also not as easy as it has been in the past to just, you know, put together a deposit and yep. and be able to drop that in to purchase your home.
Maybe before you move off that slide,
yeah.
I think what's really interesting to me on this is that in my mind, I have this idea of a person who needs financial advice is someone with a lot of assets, it's a bit complicated, needs insurance. But there's actually a number of things on that slide that say, actually, it's not just about you already saved money. You need to get advice. It's like, as it says there, around the mortgage and debt management, insurance needs. You don't already need to have that saving pool to get the advice.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. And that's where, I guess, you know, perhaps there's a distinction. It's not really, I guess, from an industry point of view, between financial planner and financial advisor, mm-hmm. because someone goes, oh, I don't need a financial advisor. I haven't got any finances. You know, I need to have some finances before yeah. I get advised on them. Whereas I guess maybe that's where the financial planner word has sort of come in, where it's sort of like, okay, well, you need to build in some steps or have some sort of a process in order to get to where you're going. And that way,
get that money that then they can advise you on.
That's right. And having some structure around that goal is I think is important as well, because by having, you know, and it's like anything, is people go to fitness coaches and those sort of things, right? Yep. It's someone that you're held accountable to as much as anything. And we'll chat around a little bit around the sort of accountable and the ongoing bit a little bit later on as well. But it's by having that sort of touch point where someone can go, well, how are you going with those goals that you gave me that we then put a plan in place for? Yeah. And that way, you know, maybe it does stop a little bit of, you know, discretionary spending or, you know, buying the latest thing that comes up that, you know, sets you back a little bit from the goal that you're hoping
goal.
For. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
I love that. I once spoke to an advisor that was like, in their reception room, they have all these photos of all their clients doing the things that were their goals, like achieving their goals, you know, going on that trip or buying that house or having the pool, whatever it is.
Yep.
They have this photo board of it, and they're like, people come in and they love to see that these people that have achieved their goals.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, look, absolutely. And you know, there's no greater feeling as in as a financial advisor, because that's, you know, that's really doing your job. You know, people come to you with a problem and you give them a format or, you know, a pathway to a solution, and you get the solution. And over time, actually, you know, typically with an advisor, it's the fun part about it is that you get to see the life cycle, or you get to help people get to a, you know, a certain point. And obviously they may have then future goals, you know, so they bought their house and then they want to go on and do something else. But it's the wins that you have with your client at that stage, which then, I guess, you know, inflates your tires for the next person that comes in the door. And we'll talk a little bit around finding advisors in a moment. But when advisors get that magic ride, you actually find that they don't need to advertise anymore.
Yeah.
And they actually become completely referral-based, because everybody loves what they're doing, and off it goes. And that's a huge draw card, I think, particularly to the new world of advisors, because from a financial point of view, the finance is certainly there, and you can charge a fee, and you know, it can mm-hmm. be appropriate and all the rest of it. But a lot of the ways of the old, and I've written a little bit about this in some articles recently as well, are closing up in terms of, you know, it's not purely going in there, you know, with self-interest. It's about going in there to help people do what they want, and that's part of the job.
Yep.
And if you're good at what you do, you'll get paid for it. You get rewarded for it. So, and just on that, just a note from myself as well, and you touched off at the top there about being in the mining game. So my first interface with financial advice personally was rolling into the mining boom in the late 2000s, getting on a terrific wicket, having more money than sense.
Mm-hmm.
and going to see a financial advisor who was actually recommended by my boss. Now, my boss was, you know, multitudes of, you know, wealth higher than I was at the time, having just finished university. And the problem I had at the time was I went to see this guy and, you know, highly regarded, all the rest of it. It's over in Perth. I won't name names. And he said, come back when you've got $500,000 and I can do something with it. And I was like, hang on a second, buddy. How do I get to half? I needed someone to help me get to the $500,000 and then we can take it from there. And that just sort of shows that there are, you know, there's gaps in the advice world, and it's about finding the right advisor to suit, you know, your circumstances and being able to go out there and shop around as well. So
that's really interesting. Actually, while we're on this topic of how you got into financial advice, I might bring Chris in here who can tell us how did you get into financial advice, Chris?
Okay, so pretty much my background, I've got an extensive background in investment banking, retail banking, as well as funds management. And the way my attention diverted away from investment banking, which I was working at most recently, was because of the Banking Royal Commission. And I saw that there was a lot of criticism with respect to the standards of advice and the motivation of some advisors. And because that criticism was taking place during the Royal Commission, there were to be proposed changes to the way that advice was to happen going forward. And with those new changes coming into place, I thought, okay, now personally, as a professional myself, I give more credit and more validity to the field of advice. So I got qualified myself during the Royal Commission.
Yep.
So I meet all the new FASEA standards to be an advisor. And yeah, so I've come on board with Nucleus Wealth. Yeah, pretty much attracted by the new levels of higher standards in the industry.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's something I hear across advisors, newer generation advisors, is that they're really seeking to help people with their situations. And there's a big shift away from, and, you know, the regulators will be so happy to hear this, there's a big shift away from the previous culture where it was about pushing product. So I think it is a really exciting time to be entering the industry. Anyway, we do digress. We have set up why you might need to get advice, and I'll hand it back over to Tim to tell us how you go about getting it.
Sure thing. So just before I do that, I might just set the scene on the process. Before we get to the process of advice, what I've done here is actually combine the two charts in a way, and I won't dwell on this, but this is really just left for people to have a bit of a look at, saying, okay, well, look, I'm in my 40s, I'm in the grow stage, and there's a list of things that, you know, potentially I could get some help with. So I won't dwell too much on that, but just sort of going back over the fact that starting savings plans and setting goals in your 20s and 30s is the foundation component of, you know, what an advisor can provide for you. So if you're listening in your 20s and 30s, like, this is certainly relevant to you, as much as it is at the other end of the or the agent stage, as I like to say, of the life cycle, which is, you know, then having a look at your goals and getting confidence, and really a huge part of all of this is getting confidence in doing what you're doing. And, you know, there's a huge amount of, opaqueness in the way that people run their own finances more often than not. Money comes in, money goes out, and then at the end of the year, and I've heard this so many times, it's not funny, I'm not getting anywhere. I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere. I'm getting pay rises, I'm working hard, and, you know, Bugalocks down the road has, you know, just bought a second property or something. I don't know what's going, you know, I want to go on that path. So they're sort of, I guess, the touch points, but, you know, and it's all about having, you know, confidence and having, you know, some peace of mind that you're on a pathway. You can always change the pathway, but at least something's better than nothing as well.
I think that I'll just touch quickly on that point of confidence, which is, I think, so relevant across that entire life spectrum, in the sense that I've read a lot lately about people who have retired and they're living off their retirement savings, and they're scared that they're going to run out of money. And so that's one way in which seeking financial advice or services can actually help you to be confident that you're on the right track no matter what.
Yep.
And then at the start of your life cycle, something that we've talked a bit about internally lately is actually being confident enough to know that you have a plan in place to know what money you can spend and comfortably spend and what money you need to be saving to be on the path that you want to be. Because I know for myself, I always feel guilty spending money. Like, everything should be saved. team. But so, you know, we start talking more internally about actually giving yourself permission to spend money on things that you want to now, knowing that in the future you're set up.
I think that's an important point, because there is a misconception that getting financial advice and saving towards your future is sacrificing spending now. Whereas if you do seek the advice, you're able to really structure your finances more efficiently. For example, it could be that that you know certain ways of buying a house might be structurally more tax efficient, for example. So you can achieve those goals by getting that advice while still being able to do that discretionary spending. So I think the efficient use of the resources that you have really is the key to achieving those goals and being able to enjoy the money that you have now while still being able to provide for your future.
That's a great point. Mm. Okay, I'm sold. Tim, how do we do this?
Just one last one, just on the young people one. I'd like to throw in a few little tidbits and examples and just, I guess, share my experiences. And look, I've been in front of so many people over nearly the last decade. For people in their 20s and 30s, and I've sort of tried to impart this on our own staff at Nucleus Wealth as well, one of the simplest things you can do, and this is sort of just going along the lines of what you were just saying then, Chris, is things like adding additional contributions to superannuation, right? It doesn't have to be much. It just needs to, you know, just get off the minimum. And time and time again, when I sit down with a late 30-year-old or a 40-year-old, and we have a bit of a chat and we work through all the things, and then you go, okay, you know, let's have a look at what you've got in super, and it's like, wow, that's like double what I was expecting. And the reason why was because in their 20s, they decided to start, you know, taking advantage of putting some money into super, or, you know, back in the day, there was better bonuses than there was now if you actually did put some in and the government matched it and things like that as well. And then they got the compounding effect of 10 years of it, you know, of it just rolling over and over and over. And it actually turns into a bit of a proud asset, yep, as opposed to it just being, oh, and this is my super, I can't remember where it is. It's like, this is actually a substantial amount of money.
But also affects the now, right? That's right. Have more in your super at that point. Mm. It means you don't have to save as much and you have more discretionary spending then, because you've already gotten ahead with where you need to be.
That's right. And if you can use that compounding, like superannuation is designed to be a 40-year investment vehicle, but most people only take advantage of it in the last sort of 10 to 15 years. That's like, help, I need to just get as much money in as I can. I'm sorry, kids, we're not going overseas for 5 years because daddy doesn't want to eat cat food sandwiches at the other end, right? And if you do it in your 20s and 30s, and all of a sudden, you know, you're well ahead of the pack, and it just goes. It just goes from there. So anyway, we'll stick on the mindful of time. So I've written a piece recently. It's going to be coming out very soon on the process of advice. And what I really aim to do with this was to help illuminate to people or give you a little bit of an understanding of what a typical face-to-face advice process looks like. Now, that can obviously, I'll leave the caveat that many advisors use many different methods. They're professionals and they've got their own path that works very well for themselves. But I just thought I'd put something together for you know, a huge number of people out there that haven't seen an advisor. Look, the figures are often quoted to be around 20-25% of Australians are sought advice or have an advisor. So that leaves a huge amount perhaps in the dark. And so, you know, the idea of this article and today was to help fit that in. I'll just quickly step through the process itself. Feel free to check out the article in depth. But I guess the key thing was obviously number one is finding an advisor. Recommendations from family and friends is a great place to start because you've got that trust element there and you're ready to go. However, there's also the caveat, like I did with my boss recommendation, that it may not be appropriate at different age and stage. So it's a great place to start, but there are also, of course, plenty of opportunities out there through organisations like the Profession of Independent Financial Advisors, who's a nationwide network of advisors that we've had a bit to do with, you know, through the journey with Nucleus Wealth, and we actually refer clients to them. And then also through places like the Financial Planning Association and those sort of things, where you can type in your address and it gives you a list of advisors in the area. Often the next step from there is then, you know, checking out the appropriateness, even if it's just going to their webpage, having a bit of a look around, getting a bit of a look and feel. If it's, you know, if it's uptight and looks like it's, you know, belongs on Wall Street and you're looking to start a savings plan with $20, you know, maybe they're automatically telling you not to go down that path. More often than not, though, they're pretty general and they'll at least, you can make an appointment quite quickly. A couple of must-dos, particularly if these aren't coming from a, so these advisors or all these tips aren't coming from a recommendation from a family or friend. Maybe you've just come across them online. Maybe you've just been hit with some advertising or something like that. Is to go to ASIC's, so our regulator's website called Money Smart, and they actually do have a register of financial advisors. So every advisor that is legally allowed to provide advice in Australia needs to sit on this, and it will actually have their qualifications and previous work experience and things like that as well. So that's a must do. And there's also actually a terrific checklist on choosing an advisor on the Money Smart website as well. So you're welcome to jump into that. And for mine, that's you know, that's just something that it takes 2 seconds. And, you know, whilst the broad majority of advisors out there are doing the right thing, there's always bad eggs that, you know, that taint the broth. And this is just a really good way of making sure that, you're not going down that path. You can do a Google check as well, just to see if there's, you know, they've run foul of the law at some point. And you know, I guess it's just all coming together that, you know, it takes some time. We'll talk about the initial meeting in a moment, but you've got to set up some time. You've probably got to go to their office or do something on Zoom or whatever it is. So, you know, don't waste your time with duds, and, you know, just filter them out.
At that Money Smart website, what else can you use that for? What is its purpose?
Yeah, look, well, Money Smart, well, I guess it's just a retail financial interface with the regulator. I guess that's a pretty bad way of explaining it, but huge amount of information. Obviously, you know, fantastically compliant, but you know, look, enormous amount of tools. They do all sorts of things with mortgage calculators. They just offer very general. It's all general advice. I can't, you know, they're not there to provide personal advice. That's what the industry's for. Chris?
Yeah, I know for myself, when I speak with clients, I often refer them to the website to get an understanding of how to measure, for example, the level of life insurance cover that they should have within superannuation. And even if it doesn't give you the exact answer that you want, at least it gives you guidance as to, you know, what you need to consider in order to determine that figure. So I think it's a great website that's run by the Australian government or the regulator. So it's not biased in any way, but yeah, it does give some good information within the context of the Australian regulatory environment. What's in the best interest of the clients?
Yep. Yeah. Sure.
And you actually just mentioned their general advice and personal advice. Mm. So do you want to just quickly explain the difference between the two?
Yeah. Sure. So look, well, general advice is widely available out there. It's, you know, it's product advice. It's okay, this is what the product can do. What it's not saying is this is what the product can do for you given your personal circumstances. Okay. So as soon as there's some collection of personal information about yourself and your situation, and then mention of products and services comes in after that, that's personal advice, because it needs to, the situation needs to be considered before people provide personal advice. Interestingly, there that it can take a number of different forms. So here at Nucleus Wealth, we offer limited personal advice. So we actually scope out all of the broader areas, which we obviously can refer down the line or triage to make sure those needs are met if required, and then offer limited personal advice on the investments inside of our onboarding portal. And that's an area, and we'll talk about it in a little bit later on. But that's an area that's growing. But then, of course, at the very end is exactly what we're talking about now, which is a full service advisor who can offer a gamut of different arrangements and services and cover off on all those considerations.
So then, just quickly, if you sort of think you might need some advice, is a good starting place actually the Money Smart website, just to see what the general advice is you can get from there, and then actually go, no, okay, this is not for me. I need some more help.
100%. Yeah, look, and even just using that, the checklist of working out, okay, here's some things to do, making sure that they're valid, but also making sure that, you know, your needs will be met by them, you know. Trying to find the next, you know, raging cryptocurrency, and advisors probably not going to be able to help you out with, right? You might want to look on YouTube, but don't
trust
it. Yeah, or don't trust it. But you know, at the end of the day, it's got to be, you know, within the confines of what the industry can provide for you. And so I guess working into that, there's experience and there's education, which is wonderful, but there's also a rapport and a personal fit element with an advisor. Now, you're going to be telling them some very personal things about yourself, and you want to make sure that you're comfortable in doing that, and also you're comfortable in receiving advice. But also, probably the larger piece of it for mine is that they're very good at explaining to you what's going on. There's no wink, wink, nudge, nudge, trust me element of advice I've always had a huge amount of problems with, because if you don't feel comfortable with the advice they're giving, and they might be shifting around, you know, big components of your financial future,
yep.
Then you've got to sort of think, well, you know, is this going to be A, in my best interest, and B, am I going to be comfortable with this? Or, you know, I've come to an advisor because I'm not sleeping well because of these issues.
Yeah.
And if I go and get advice, am I going to be sleeping better or worse at the other end of it?
But you want to be sleeping better. I think this is such an important point that you make here. You want to be sleeping better because you understand what's going on.
Correct.
Not because you feel like this is a really great person that makes you feel good.
Mm.
Not to degrade them, but when you want financial advice, you're not looking for a salesperson who can make you feel good. You want the technical person who can help you to understand it.
Yep. Well, that's right. And it's like anything, you get the executive summary that you can understand, and then they go away and do the minutiae of the actual, the plugging in the pieces and all the rest of it. But as long as you're at the top, you've got that clear idea of what's happening. Then you should be pretty good. So that's sort of the rapport bit. The rest of the initial meeting is typically just what they call fact finding. So, collecting up all the information around, your current situation. So it could be loans, superannuation, savings, and all those sort of things. And then, of course, just tying in the goals that you're looking to achieve, right? And all of this can happen in any order, really. You'd like to think the rapport and personal fit bit happens first, but the rest of it can sort of move around.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, there's then the scoping element of what needs to be done today and what interlocks with other areas of your life, and so therefore should be done sooner rather than later, and then potentially what can be done later on.
Yep.
And then in that element then becomes the pricing. Okay, so I need to do this immediate bit of work now, and here's what the fee is. And then, we can look at subsequent work later on. Or it might be we need to do a huge amount of work now to get the whole thing, back together. You might be in bits. And I've done a lot of work with clients who have been in bits. And mm-hmm. So it's a lot of work to get the whole thing back together again. And then you can work, talk about what goes forward from there. The pricing element's interesting in the sense, and everyone wants to know what's a fee, what's the right fee, mm-hmm. and all the rest of it. It's less about the fee, and it's more about being comfortable that you're getting value for that fee,
yep.
right? And that's the job, or that's the particular bit of work for an advisor at that part in the meeting. They need to explain to you, A, that these are the problems, and B, this is what needs to be done to fix it, and here's the cost that's going to wrap all that up for you to walk away and be happy with it. Pricing can take a number of different forms. A lot of people have moved to a thing called fee-for-service now, so there's obviously no commissions and trails and all these sort of things coming out of financial products anymore, which is terrific,
mm-hmm.
but it also means that the fee is higher. Because the industry was built on actually a lot of subsidisation, and now that subsidy is gone, and so the cost of advice at the front end's gone up. But of course, what would you prefer? Paying a bit more and having your best interests looked after,
mm-hmm.
or getting some free advice, which is really just commission-filled products in disguise that may or may not fit in the old
For everyone out there, Tim's using the air inverted.
I'm using
commas
air
a lot,
so
a lot right now.
we're going to video. We'll go to video at some point, and this will become a bit more relevant. But that's days gone by. It was the old when all you've got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, and so high commission products would just fly out the door and be really inappropriately advised and all the rest of it. So that's that. The strategy piece, I guess, and this is this can really depend on the complexity and depth of what you're bringing to an advisor, but you may find there'll be some interim meetings. So they'll go away and they go, right, we've got a lot to process here. They may not even have the pricing at that stage. You may get it later on with the strategy piece. They're crucial meetings because there may not be, so you've given a heap of information in maybe an hour or an hour and a half with an advisor. But then they may need to know a bit more. So they go, okay, I've got three strategies in mind, and then set up another meeting. Now, and keeping in mind, the meeting may be face-to-face, it may be over Zoom. One of the beautiful things about, the year that we've had is the fact that people are now starting to adopt these Zoom meetings. They're nice and quick, really punchy. And what it's doing is it's steering that strategy to a point where when it's presented to you, you probably already know what the strategy is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's just formulated into or formalised into the presentation piece.
And sorry, just marrying this up with what we've mentioned earlier. So obviously when you're younger, your financial structures are more simple And getting access to that advice would be, I guess, cheaper, being that the advisor wouldn't be dedicating as much work into providing that service to you as they would be, for example, if you're older, owning multiple businesses, married, divorced, own houses, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. Yep.
So the more complicated that advice is, the more effort that goes into providing that personalised financial advice. And obviously, if they're dedicating so much more time to you as a client, as opposed to, for example, your son or daughter, which has a very simple structure, then the price or the cost of that advice is significantly different.
Absolutely, yeah. And so where I'm headed with all this is essentially the advice will come through as a statement of advice, which is it's a legal document. It's highly regulated. It costs a lot of money. You know, and these things can get quite big depending on the amount of work that goes into them. And it's basically a record of all the work. And I'll touch on that in a minute. Just quickly on the strategy piece, though. What I wanted to bring up was making sure that the strategy reflects your future intentions. Now, you've got to be a little bit careful that you've really nailed it, because the work that goes into then building out, you know, say a plan, a financial plan, and those sort of things, if you don't give the advisor the right info at the time, and I'll give you a really good example, is, you know, you've sat down, you said you earn X amount of dollars per year, and you want to retire at, you know, XYZ, really basic sort of strategy. However, what you're actually thinking is in 2 or 3 years' time, you might go back to school, have a couple of years off work, and, you know, head down another path. You need to make sure that those sort of milestone sort of pieces or proposed milestones are actually built in there. And it can be quite illuminating to do it as a strategy. So you might say, okay, well, maybe I do just hack out this job for another 5 or 10 years and on this pay and all mm-hmm. the rest of it. Or do I go down path B and am I going to be okay?
Yeah.
Is the cash flow going to work for me to do that? And you might actually find that rather than, you know, quitting in 3 years, you might be able to quit in 1 year. You never know. So you get to where you're going.
And also on that point, disclosing those intentions to your advisor will allow the advisor to accommodate for that. So they can actually probably suggest a plan that could help you achieve those goals, whereas not mentioning it to them, obviously the plan that he or she makes would be taking you down the path to a different goal or a different path that you're not able to achieve. So going back to having an advisor be able to facilitate your discretionary spending as well as achieving your goals, if the advisor doesn't know that in the interim you need to do that, then he can't possibly help you to achieve that.
Yeah. I also think that's a goal. Like, you need to think about goals.
What, be honest with your advisor?
No. Well, sure, that can be a goal. But if you want to make a career change, that's a goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So yep. You don't need to just think about that fancy holiday. That's all that a goal is. I think that really financial advice is about allowing you to live the life you want to live, or financial health is about that. And that might be taking time off to volunteer or taking time off to study more, or, you know, anything.
It's interesting
anything
too.
It's a goal.
The interesting part about the goal setting piece is, as an advisor sitting in lots, you know, in front of lots of couples over the years, is it can be quite revealing what people's goals are in the meeting, right? Where, you know, you'll sit down, okay, you know, Mr. Smith, you know, what do you want to do? Mrs. Smith, what do you want to do? Have you guys actually spoken about this before this meeting? It doesn't sound like you have. All right. maybe they've intimated it, but they've really thought about it, and this is a time to actually flesh it out. They're paying money to put together a plan and do all these things. So you've got to, you know, that honesty then suddenly comes out.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why, you might... the meeting might stop there, and then you'll come back and have a strategy meeting once they've, had the...
That's a really good point on the couples thing. I saw a financial advisor last year, and they referred me to a dating coach.
There you go.
So, you know, it really is bring your goals.
There you go. It kind of feels like they're stepping outside of the traditional means there. All power to them, you know.
Full service.
Yeah, that's right. That is the full service. So just quickly, I was doing through the presentation. So a statement of advice, the presentation at the end, once you've done the strategy and it's all been put together, it can take many forms. So some advisors like to use things like PowerPoint slides. I'll come come in, call you into the office, or maybe go to your house and put together a show for you. It can be done over Zoom. You know, it can be done in the traditional way where you just work your way through the statement of advice and you make sure that they understand everything. That at the end, it doesn't matter which way they go, but the statement of advice is the must-have piece in all of this. That's the bit that needs to be
And that's a document. You should receive that as a document.
It's a document form. You can get it electronically, but and you know, print it out, bound, the whole works. People, depending on you know what you paid for it and how much is in there. But there's just a couple little bits in there that I just sort of highlight. So number one is current circumstances at the start of the document, just making sure they're still correct. And big pieces of work sometimes can take a couple of months to put together a statement of advice. Things can change, and they need to make you need to make sure that what's reflected in the front is what you know. It's the old garbage in, garbage out. Otherwise, benefits and limitations is something that you can zero in on as well. Particularly if they're shifting or proposing a shift from one product to another, they need to make sure that. They are explaining the benefits of doing that move, but also any limitations or risks in moving from that as well. And just finally, projections are quite an interesting one from an investment point of view. So particularly with long-term projections of investment growth. Mm-hmm. So you might say, okay, I'm 40 years old and I want to retire at 60 or 55 and here's what I need to do. We're in a really low interest rate environment at the moment. It's tipped to remain so. So if they're using projections from 5 years ago, which might be a high growth fund does 9.5% or 10% or something like that, I'd be finding out whether or not they're actually reflecting that into like what can happen in the future. Long run, averages have a way of hiding things. And, perhaps even just sort of saying, well, look, you can run it at 10 because maybe the markets will go back to normal, but wouldn't mind running it at 6?
Yeah.
Running it at some lower level that basically just gives you a lower bound to say, okay, well, if the markets do not, or if the interest rates stay low for this, an extraordinary period of time in front of us, is this going to impact my plan?
I think that scenario analysis is a really good point because I think when I was reading your article and I came to this bit, my first question was, how do I validate that? If I'm, at the financial advisor and they use these rates, where do I go to determine what is the right rate that they should be using?
Yeah, and look, it is a tough one. A financial advisor should be able to offer that to you, though, to say, okay, and it's probably even just worth asking the question. Okay, you at the start in the fact find you might come out as a high growth investor for this particular part of the work, and they'll often say okay, expected returns are between 8.5 and 9.5 depending on what sheet they're using and the numbers they're using, and that might be an opportunity to say, well, look, do you feel that's going to be sustainable going forward for the next 5 years, given that interest rates are a third of or half of what they what they are now, what they were in the past.
Is this potentially something that you could move right to actually the first meeting that you have with your advisor to determine whether or not you want to proceed with them? Something along like, what sort of long-term rates do you use and why? And to a bit of a screening tool?
Yeah, possibly. It's difficult to talk. And we get it even here. People ring up and they go, okay, so what's tactical growth going to do next year? And you're like, you can't, there's no answer to that. We can say this is our benchmarks, but for an advisor,
but you can talk to them about the assumptions that they're using, right? So you can't.
That's right.
There's no way they're going to be able to tell you what markets are going to do next month or next year, because if they did, they wouldn't be doing that job, right?
Oh, someone's lying. Yeah, they're either lying to themselves or they're lying
Good
to you.
Point.
Yeah, there's a lie there.
But they can talk to you about how they come to the assumptions and whether or not they do scenario analysis or that sort of thing. Did you know what I mean?
Oh, look, 100%. And that's part of that scoping of work and pricing piece. If they're just plucking a figure out of, Morningstar, or if they're actually doing, actually putting some thought into it. And there's a huge number of financial planning packages and software out there and there's no best one, right? But at the same time, there's different levels that they can do these projection work and those sort of things as well.
It is just so, I think it is really important to talk about this because it's so important to the plan that they give you and the reality of whether or not you're going to achieve those goals. It all comes down to those assumptions that they put in there.
Ooh,
so
yeah.
Actually, it really is an important part of it.
It is. And what it does is it actually kind of dovetails into the ongoing nature of advice as well, right? Because an estimate made now might completely overreach what happens next year.
Yep.
And so then further work needs to be done to get you back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of the ongoing piece. There's lots of moving parts. You've got investment markets moving parts. You've got personal life moving parts. There's all these different elements that can go astray from what the initial plan had in place. And the ongoing piece is exactly that. Look, I would prefer, and I often will undercook the investment returns, with the idea being that you need to do less later on. Yep. That's a better story. For mine, you know, you're almost better off saying, okay, well, look, let's put in your contributions at, you know, a 6% return rather than a 9%. And so then, you know, year 3, year 4, year 8, you can actually say you don't need to put any contributions in anymore, and you can start doing something else with the money, as opposed to trying to pay catch up later on in life, which is more dangerous and, you know, hits harder on your cash flow.
And also earlier in life, because you've got, I suppose, a longer time to reach those goals, then you can weather the short-term storms which might happen in financial markets and still achieve those goals. So I think it's important to like have maybe an annual catch-up with those financial advisors to revise those projections and also to revise your own, tolerance towards risk. You know, are you still a growth investor? Are you now approaching retirement? Should you take more conservative positions in your portfolios, etc.?
Dovetails lovely into the final piece in the graph there as well, which is the implementation ongoing. So implementation is effectively post the advice piece. You're happy with everything, and then who's going to do the work? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can do it yourself. I'll recommend that you get the advisor to do it. They'll know the products. They've got the admin team that do this every day. And it's more about just avoiding human errors. And also people say that they'll go and do something and then you ring them up 2 weeks later and it's at the back of the priority list. Yeah. Pay the money if it costs more. Most of the time it's actually built into the cost of the advice as well.
Greater part of the cost is actually the planning, right, and the recommendations.
That's right.
So don't spend all that money on that and then not implement it. That's to me a worse nightmare.
And what it does as well is, and this is going to this various levels of ongoing service packages, is once it's actually all set up, there's the ability then to have a full ongoing relationship with an advisor or a reactive sort of style where you come to them. So maybe there's an admin ongoing cost where if you need to change your maiden name to you need to change your surname after being married.
If I get married.
you need to update addresses, doing all those sort of little headachey things that are really easy to overlook. If you can just drop it on the lap of their admin team, then I'll just sort it out in 2 seconds. And that's where I see some value in the middle ground between no ongoing and full ongoing. For some people, full ongoing may not be appropriate, or maybe they just, they can't afford it at the time. Yep. It's going to impact it. But paying a little bit per month or however the advisor wants to charge just keeps them on the radar, and also means that, any issues, they've got questions about it, they'll get, they've got, first priority in getting those answered as well, because they're a paying customer.
There's some genuine cases where you don't need to have that ongoing. Like, it's not a case of whether you can afford or not. It actually just doesn't make sense to.
Yeah, oh, look, absolutely. So there's sort of, and this is where it becomes a very scoped piece of work where a client might come and they're just looking for one particular area, right? Maybe they're just trialling you out as an advisor. Like, they don't want to do the whole thing. They go, if you can do this well for me, then I'll come back to you with all the rest of the stuff that I've got. That's when, the upfront of the advice cost and the implementation is pretty much the end of the end of the deal. And then, they'll come back to you. And that's, a very reactive way, I guess. And advisors would prefer to just, have an ongoing point of view for the relationship that they've built with you. But obviously, and for the commercial aspect as well. The other interesting part as well, I guess, with the ongoing piece, and this is going back to that sort of young client versus old client, another chart up here from Michael Kitsis, is the fact that the young people, as we sort of kicked off with at the start, they have a lot more things that they may need to review, right? Where the older sole client, is really just coming down to, managing tax and making sure their investments are in line with how they're feeling and doing some rebalancing and all the rest of it as well. I think there's terrific value in having some form, and Chris mentioned before, like an annual. At a minimum, an annual sort of review's good for you and them, so that you've got a fixed timeline that you can sort of, you can look at, okay, in 12 months' time we want to be here, and that's where, and then we'll work at what we need to adjust. But there's also, and this is going back to this whole Zoom phenomenon now, there's also the ability to have these little ad hoc things. It might be 20 minutes. Oh, yeah, I've just received a, $10,000 bonus from work. What should I do with it? Okay, great. Here's what we can do with it, da-da-da-da-da. And so that's where... you know, on a person by person basis, you've just sort of go, okay, well, what's the next couple of years going to look like, and you know, where am I going to see value out of what I'm paying for this ongoing service fee? And look, more often than not, I think I think you'd be okay to give it a whirl, you know, and just see what they can do for you. Quite often, when you're a paying client in the ongoing thing, you'll get there. You know, there might be a monthly update, and you'll get tax little bits and pieces leading into the tax year, and all these little additional general information bits that might spur the Zoom meeting for 15 minutes to just make sure that you've got the right amount of contributions in for the end of the year, and all those little personal financial admin roles as well. So,
Okay. So that's maybe the next slide. I think that's really an overview of traditional advice, Tim. Is that how you would describe what we've just discussed?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think because obviously traditional advice is where it's all come from.
Yep.
For mine, it's where it's where you'll get the full encompassment of everyone's needs. So you go to the right advisor with all these problems, and they'll be able to sit down and work through them all with you. And that's sort of the way it stands at the moment. What's been fantastic over probably the last decade or so has been the introduction of what they, it's called robo advice there. And I guess that's unfortunately the name we're sort of stuck with, but I like to call it digital advice. It's not so much as robo, it's just advice that's being provided through a digital format as opposed to a face-to-face, high touch, high cost method. So obviously that's something we employ here at Nucleus Wealth with the, our limited advice piece for the investment only. And I guess it's an area that's growing. There's a number of providers out there that are doing, a huge amount of work in actually, I wouldn't say they're completely trying to take over from a face-to-face advice piece, because it's very difficult to have a relationship with your computer screen.
Yeah.
But it's giving people who want that element, or maybe more of a technical calculation-based thing that they can plug in and have a bit of a play with, and it's sort of maybe a sandbox for people that like numbers and those sort of things. And obviously it'll grow out to be something that then, matches off in different other personality types. But I see a lot of people that I've spoken to that have used them, and even people that have spoken to us, are guys that like spreadsheets and guys that, like they like to create their own solution using a very switched on tool. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where I see the market at the moment.
But with robo advice. So I guess robo digital advice, what it does is it just applies a set of logic to situations, right? Mm. And so that can actually be as complicated or as deep as you want it, as the producer wants it to be.
Yep.
And it can, so how much does that differ from what an advisor is actually doing once they're going through your process? I mean, don't they follow the same idea of a set of logic that they'll be applying and the exceptions to that?
Yeah, yes and no. I think you are right, but what an advisor can do, and this is basically a product of experience, is ask the right questions at the right time.
Okay.
A digital advice has to ask all the questions, because it can't go, through the process of our rapport building, you've mentioned that you were overseas for a lot, or you played football, in your early years, but you stopped because of injury.
Okay, right.
Okay, so now maybe that's going to have an impact on insurance, mm-hmm. right? And that's the bit that's going to be quite difficult to replicate in a digital advice realm. Okay. You go, okay, this thing's going to do it for a third of the cost, but it's going to take six times as long because I've got 80 pages of questions that I need to go through. Have you played football? No. Have you played netball? No. Have you played Where a human will be able to just in the space of probably 20 to 30 minutes, and through comfortable and enjoyable rapport building session, we'll be able to blow away 99% of those questions and just ask the real ones. So that's where I think the face-to-face piece. But this is sort of dovetails nicely into this hybrid model, which is sort of where the world's headed, I think, in this transformation. We've seen it already overseas, so there's been a huge number, the robo / digital advice was sort of kicked off just after the GFC, when people had enough of their advisors for a lot of good reason. They just wanted basic advice to get into the investments and start building money that way. Over time, of course, the provision of the digital advice or the limited advice through the digital way was outgrown. And so what a couple of names, Betterment and Wealthfront, were a couple of them, basically, you know, started off by trying to fill the boots of a financial advisor, and then became some of the biggest hirers of financial advisors in America because they had this huge amount of, you know, surplus needs that they couldn't do. And so that's where I see this hybrid model working out really well, yep. because it means that you can book a phone call with an advisor and pay not much, but at least then you walk at the end of the phone call, you've got comfort that a human's ask the right questions at the right time. And then you can jump all the way to full advice, where you probably set up a Zoom meeting and we go through exactly what we've done before, but you could do it anywhere, in the country or the world. And so that's the, you know, I think that's the way that the advice, world is going to go.
Yep.
It's going to be, you know, robo or digital advice for some areas can mm-hmm. be provided very cheaply or free. And, you know, it's obviously, you know, immensely scalable. And then there'll be this, you know, backstop of humans that just make sure that, you know, that the needs are going to be yeah. met, you know, in the best possible and most appropriate fashion. So
I think something that we haven't talked a whole lot about is affordability, because I remember from your article, you said that about 80% of Australians don't have a financial advisor or haven't accessed one at a point in time.
Yep.
And I'm not suggesting that that's all of them or entirely because of affordability, but I think there is an element to this of affordability, which is where some of these digital tools are trying to come in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Oh, look, the digital tools, they're going to get better and better.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get better and better. You know, days gone by, it was, you know, a series of things that you just had to fill in, read what it was and plug it in like an online form, and then it just press calculate at the bottom. marvels of modern technology, you know, we can build videos into it and we can make it really easy. We could, you know, you could have it voice activated if you wanted to do it an app on your phone. And it's really about breaking down, the data collection component and the ultimate algorithm that sort of works out the best path forward, and making the end user enjoyable enough for someone to actually interface with it. And that for mine, that's the hard bit in all of this. You've got advisors with rising costs, compliance costs, regulatory costs, and education costs as well, of course.
Yeah.
Fighting raising their costs. They're looking for efficiencies, and digital advice is a terrific way to implement a lot of efficiency into certain areas and certain needs of your client base. And then, you know, essentially you've got to once you've got that in place, the client's actually got to want to use that digital piece though. And that's the other bit that, you know, the war that needs to be won. You know, 20, 30, 40-year-olds probably spend a lot of time on the internet, comfortable in doing things, you know, and receiving advice through the internet. The senior end of the market, not so much. So I think the evolution of these techniques, it will grow as the, dare I say it, that end of the market grows out.
And
the 40-year-olds become the 50-year-olds, et cetera, right? And they'll just drag a happiness with using digital going forward. But anyway, if we can make it, as ourselves and also as an industry, a 65-year-old is comfortable going down and receiving this information, I think we'd probably hit the magic rock. Yeah.
That's an interesting point, because with the current situation with COVID, it seems like a lot of people that would otherwise not be forced to use technology have been. So the number of people that would feel more comfortable with these hybrid models, for example, or the robo-advice, as opposed to, say, 2 years ago when they weren't forced to use a computer for example, for their daily work as they have been over the past year, going forward, they are going to be feeling more comfortable with these hybrid models and, hopefully speaking to people like myself.
Yes.
Well, that's right.
A good segue, because you've actually just taken on the role and responsibility of our Ask an Advisor series, which is basically, Tim, the first step in getting people to trust the services is answering their questions, you know. Obviously, they're going to have questions.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So basically at Nucleus Wealth, I do speak to a lot of clients at different levels of experience in financial markets, and they have all kinds of questions. questions and I try to answer them directly. Nucleus Wealth is actually great with respect to giving different avenues for clients to have their feedback and to ask questions. And they have access to both myself and Tim, either via email through the website content, which I'm working a lot on these days, as well as they can book calls to discuss in detail. So typical questions that I get from clients include, as Tim touched on earlier about the Money Smart website. If they're asking for guidance as to, you know, they're doing an application for their superannuation and they're wanting to know, you know, how much life cover do I need? So I would, guide them to the right path to actually be able to determine that, what they need to consider, have that discussion with them. Mm-hmm. And once they feel comfortable with the knowledge and what they've considered, they're able to complete that process. At Nucleus Wealth, we offer a product called Separately Managed Account, which has a great number of benefits as opposed to other structures out there, particularly for superannuation. Because it's a fairly new product to the market, as opposed to, you know, other products the clients might be familiar with, they need an explanation. Mm. You know, how does this work? How does this benefit me? And new products come to the market to address potential problems that existed previously. It's pretty good to be able to have direct access to these clients and get a real understanding of where their concerns are at, what questions do they have, and that's really the basis for me actually focusing on answering these questions through our website, so that our clients can scroll through, and scrolling through our website, they're able to, for example, maybe see questions that they hadn't actually thought about, but reading the question, they might be curious, yeah, what is the answer to that?
Yep.
So at Nucleus Wealth, we offer a range of options, for example, self-guided, limited advice, or we can help them get access to full advice. And clients might often have problems with the onboarding process, and we're more than happy to sit with the client on the phone, take them through that process, hold their hand a little bit. So this is part of the hybrid model that we spoke about previously. And then also the website itself actually is able to provide some extra information with respect to the questions being answered there, as well as we've got certain calculators to direct clients towards certain answers to questions that they might have. We also have ongoing support. As part of the hybrid model includes your accountant might ask you for something specific, like a report, and asking us directly, we're happy to help you with those type of things. So that's basically my role at Nucleus Wealth. So I'm happy to be here and happy to continue this, evolution of providing better services.
That's a really good point, because I think, the way I feel about where we're at Nucleus Wealth is that we're at the beginning of building a journey or the beginning of a journey to build a service that we hope lots of Australians can use to help them with their financial situation. So certainly welcome questions for Chris, and also just feedback for Nucleus Wealth on some of the things that you feel like you need help with in your financial journey. And on that point, actually, questions for Chris and Tim. Our viewer question of the week this week is, what questions do you have for our financial advisors? So if you have one, would you please put it up on the chat, and we can see if we can get some answers back to you over the next week.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, wonderful.
Sounds great.
So on that note, let's look ahead to next week. We've got... we're putting together the bull case for equity in 2021, which I can't wait to hear, because I feel like every time I listen to Damien, it's the bear case for 2021. Don't tell him I said that.
Hi, Damien.
Obviously, you know, we've got valuations pretty stretched in markets already. Fundamental alarm bells are going off here, there, and everywhere, really, asking the question of, are we at the top of a normal market? As I said, these are the sort of things you'd hear on the podcast most weeks for us. But next week, we're going to be telling you that actually, no, on many accounts, that we could actually be in for a bull market in equities in 2021. So tune in next week. That's the 18th of February at 12:30 to find out why you should be holding stocks in 2021. And then to close off the show, thanks again to all of those who have watched in live for another great episode, or at least I think so. I hope you've taken away some great ideas, or at least some areas in which maybe you can improve or review your financial situation or financial health. Please feel free to click on the video to give us some feedback, and click those likes as well, please. So if you'd like to see more of our content, head over to nucleuswealth.com/content. You can stay up to date on news from us and follow us on social media. And finally, if you know anyone who'd get something out of today's episode, let them know about it, share it with your friends or colleagues, and help our show grow. So thanks again for tuning in from myself, Shelley George, and the team. And we look forward to catching you again on the next one.
Cheers.